come down the years about the Webster house. There had been a robot named Jenkins who had served the family from the very first. There had been an old man sitting in a wheelchair on the front lawn, staring at the stars and waiting for a son who never came. And a curse had hung above the house, the curse of having lost to the world the philosophy of Juwayne. The visor was in one corner of the room, an almost forgotten piece of furniture, something that was scarcely used. There was no need to use it. All the world was here in the city of Geneva. Webster rose, moved toward it, stopped, and thought. The dial settings were listed in the logbook, but where was the logbook? More than likely, somewhere in his desk. He went back to the desk, started going through the drawers. Excited now, he pawed furiously, like a terrier, digging for a bone. Jenkins, the ancient robot, scrubbed his metallic chin with metallic fingers. It was a thing he did when he was deep in thought, a meaningless, irritating gesture he had picked up from long association with the human race. His eyes went back to the little black dog sitting on the floor beside him. "So the wolf was friendly," said Jenkins. "Offered you the rabbit." Ebenezer jigged excitedly upon his bottom. "He was one of them we fed last winter, the pack that came up to the house and we tried to tame them. Would you know the wolf again?" Ebenezer nodded. "I got his scent," he said. "I'd remember him." Shadow shuffled his feet against the floor. "Look, Jenkins, ain't you going to smack him one? He should have been listening, and he ran away. He had no business chasing rabbits." Jenkins spoke sternly. "You're the one that should get the smacking, Shadow, for your attitude. You are assigned to Ebenezer. You should be part of him. You aren't an individual. You're just Ebenezer's hands. If he had hands, he'd have no need of you. You aren't his mentor, nor his conscience. Just his hands. Remember that." Shadow shuffled his feet rebelliously. "I'll run away," he said. "Join the wild robots, I suppose," said Jenkins. Shadow nodded. "They'd be glad to have me. They're doing things. They need all the help they can get." "They'd bust you up for scrap," Jenkins told him sourly. "You have no training, no abilities that would make you one of them." He turned to Ebenezer. "We have other robots." Ebenezer shook his head. "Shadow is all right. I can handle him. We know one another. He keeps me from getting lazy, keeps me on my toes." "That's fine," said Jenkins. "You two run along. And if you ever happen to be out chasing rabbits, Ebenezer, and run into this wolf again, try to cultivate him." The rays of the westering sun were streaming through the windows, touching the age-old room with the warmth of a late spring evening. Jenkins sat quietly in the chair, listening to the sounds that came from outside. The tinkle of cowbells, the yapping of the puppies, the ringing thud of an axe splitting fireplace logs. "Poor little fellow," thought Jenkins. "Sneaking out to chase a rabbit when he should have been listening. Too far, too fast. Have to watch that. Have to keep them from breaking down. Come fall and we'll knock off work for a week or two and have some coon hunts. Do them a world of good." Although there'd come a day when there'd be no coon hunts, no rabbit chasing, the day when the dogs finally had tamed everything, when all the wild things would be thinking, talking, working beings. A wild dream and a far one, but, thought Jenkins, no wilder and no farther than some of the dreams of man. Maybe even better than the dreams of man, for they held none of the ruthlessness that the human race had planned, aimed at none of the mechanistic brutality the human race had spawned. A new civilization, a new culture, a new way of thought. Mystic, perhaps, and visionary, but so had man been visionary, probing into mysteries that man had brushed by as unworthy of his time, as mere superstition that could have no scientific basis. Things that go bump in the night. Things that prowl around a house and the dogs get up and growl and there are no tracks in the snow. dogs howling when someone dies. The dogs knew. The dogs had known long before they had been given tongues to talk, contact lenses to read. They had not come along the road as far as men. They were not cynical and skeptic. They believed the things they heard and sensed. They did not invent superstition as a form of wishful thinking, as a shield against the things unseen. Jenkins turned back to the desk again, picked up the pen, bent over the notebook in front of him. The pen screeched as he pushed it along. Ebenezer reports friendliness in Wolf. Recommend Council detach Ebenezer from listening and assign him to contact the Wolf. Wolves, mused Jenkins, would be good friends to have. They'd make splendid scouts, better than the dogs. Tougher, faster, sneaky. They could watch the wild robots across the river and relieve the dogs. Could keep an eye on the mutant castles. Jenkins shook his head. Couldn't trust anyone these days. The robots seemed to be all right, were friendly, dropped in at times, helped out now and then. Real neighborly, in fact. But you never knew. And they were building machines. The mutants never bothered anyone, were scarcely seen, in fact. But they had to be watched, too. Never knew what devilment they might be up to. Remember what they'd done to man. That dirty trick with Juanism, handing it over at a time when it would doom the race. Men. They were gods to us, and now they're gone. Left us on our own. A few in Geneva, of course, but they can't be bothered, have no interest in us. He sat in the twilight, thinking of the whiskies he had carried, of the errands he had run, of the days when Webster's had lived and died within these walls. And now, father confessor to the dogs. Cute little devils, and bright and smart, and trying hard. A bell buzzed softly, and Jenkins jerked upright in his seat. It buzzed again, and a green light winked on the televisor. Jenkins came to his feet, stood unbelieving, staring at the winking light. Someone calling. Someone calling after almost 1,000 years. He staggered forward, dropped into the chair, reached out with fumbling fingers to the toggle, tripped it over. The wall before him melted away, and he sat facing a man across a desk. Behind the man, the flames of a fireplace lighted up a room with high, stained-glass windows. "You're Jenkins," said the man, and there was something in his face that jerked a cry from Jenkins.
You.
"I'm John Webster," said the man. Jenkins pressed his hands flat against the top of the televisor, sat straight and stiff, afraid of the unrobot-like emotions that welled within his metal being. "I would have known you anywhere," said Jenkins. "You have the look of them. I should recognize one of you. I worked for you long enough, carried drinks and... "Yes, I know," said Webster. "Your name has come down with us. We remembered you."
"You are in Geneva, John."
And then Jenkins remembered.
"I meant, sir."
"No need of it," said Webster. "I'd rather have it, John. And yes, I'm in Geneva. But I'd like to see you. I wonder if I might."
"You mean, come out here?"
Webster nodded. "But the place is overrun with dogs, sir." Webster grinned. "The talking dogs?" he asked.
"Yes," said Jenkins. "And they'll be glad to see you. They know all about the family. They sit around at night and talk themselves to sleep with stories from the old days and...
"What is it, Jenkins?"
"I'll be glad to see you, too. It has been so lonesome."
God had come. Ebenezer shivered at the thought, crouching in the dark. "If Jenkins knew I was here," he thought, "he'd whale my hide for fair. Jenkins said we were to leave him alone, for a while at least." Ebenezer crept forward on fur-soft pads,
sniffed at the study door, and the door was open, open by the barest crack. He crouched on his belly, listening, and there was not a thing to hear. Just a scent, an unfamiliar, tangy scent that made the hair crawl along his back in swift, almost unbearable ecstasy. He glanced quickly over his shoulder, but there was no movement. Jenkins was out in the dining room, telling the dogs how they must behave, and Shadow was off somewhere tending to some robot business. Softly, carefully, Ebenezer pushed at the door with his nose, and the door swung wider. Another push, and it was half open. The man sat in front of the fireplace, in the easy chair, long legs crossed, hands clasped across his stomach. Ebenezer crouched tighter against the floor, a low, involuntary whimper in his throat. At the sound, John Webster jerked erect.
"Who's there?" he asked.
Ebenezer froze against the floor, felt the pumping of his heart jerking at his body.
"Who's there?"
Webster asked once more, and then he saw the dog. His voice was softer when he spoke again.
"Come in, feller. Come on in."
Ebenezer did not stir. Webster snapped his fingers at him.
"I won't hurt you. Come on in. Where are all the others?"
Ebenezer tried to rise, tried to crawl along the floor, but his bones were rubber and his blood was water, and the man was striding toward him, coming in long strides across the floor. He saw the man bending over him, felt strong hands beneath his body, knew that he was being lifted up, and the scent that he had smelled at the open door, the overpowering godsend, was strong within his nostrils. The hands held him tight against the strange fabric the man wore instead of fur, and a voice crooned at him, not words, but comforting.
"So you came to see me," said John Webster. "You sneaked away and you came to see me."
Ebenezer nodded weakly. "You aren't angry, are you? You aren't going to tell Jenkins." Webster shook his head.
"No, I won't tell Jenkins."
He sat down, and Ebenezer sat in his lap, staring at his face, a strong, lined face with the lines deepened by the flare of the flames within the fireplace. Webster's hand came up and stroked Ebenezer's head, and Ebenezer whimpered with doggish happiness.
"It's like coming home," said Webster, and he wasn't talking to the dog. "It's like you've been away for a long, long time, and then you come home again. And it's so long you don't recognize the place, don't know the furniture, don't recognize the floor plan, but you know by the feel of it that it's an old, familiar place, and you are glad you came."
"I like it here," said Ebenezer, and he meant Webster's lap, but the man misunderstood.
"Of course you do," he said. "It's your home as well as mine. More your home, in fact, for you stayed here and took care of it while I forgot about it."
He patted Ebenezer's head and pulled Ebenezer's ears.
"What's your name?" he asked.
"Ebenezer."
"And what do you do, Ebenezer?"
"I listen."
"You listen?"
"Sure, that's my job. I listen for the Cobleys."
"And you hear the Cobleys?"
"Sometimes. I'm not very good at it. I think about chasing rabbits, and I don't pay attention."
"What do Cobleys sound like?"
"Different things. Sometimes they walk, and other times they just go bump. And once in a while they talk, although oftener they think."
"Look here, Ebenezer, I don't seem to place these Cobleys."
"They aren't any place," said Ebenezer. "Not on this earth, at least."
"I don't understand."
"Like there was a big house," said Ebenezer. "A big house with lots of rooms, and doors between the rooms, and if you're in one room, you can hear whoever's in the other rooms, but you can't get to them."
"Sure you can," said Webster. "All you have to do is go through the door."
"But you can't open the door," said Ebenezer.
You don't even know about the door. You think this one room you're in is the only room in all the house. Even if you did know about the door, you couldn't open it.
You're talking about dimensions.
Ebenezer wrinkled his forehead in worried thought.
I don't know that word you said, dimensions. What I told you was the way Jenkins told it to us. He said it wasn't really a house, and it wasn't really rooms, and the things we heard probably weren't like us.
Webster nodded to himself. That was the way one would have to do. Have to take it easy. Take it slow. Don't confuse them with big names. Let them get the idea first, and then bring in the more exact and scientific terminology. And more than likely, it would be a manufactured terminology. Already there was a coined word. Cobblies. The things behind the wall. The things that one hears and cannot identify. The dwellers in the next room. Cobblies. The cobblies will get you if you don't watch out. That would be the human way. Can't understand a thing. Can't see it. Can't test it. Can't analyze it. Okay? It isn't there. It doesn't exist. It's a ghost, a goblin, a cobbly. The cobblies will get you. It's simpler that way, more comfortable. Scared? Sure. But you forget it in the light. And it doesn't plague you, haunt you. Think hard enough and you wish it away. Make it a ghost or goblin and you can laugh at it. In the daylight. A hot, wet tongue rasped across Webster's chin and Ebenezer wriggled with delight.
I like you, said Ebenezer. Jenkins never held me this way. No one's ever held me this way.
Jenkins is busy, said Webster.
He sure is,
agreed Ebenezer.
He writes things down in a book, things that us dogs hear when we are listening and things that we should do.
You've heard about the Websters? Asked the man.
Sure. We know all about them. You're a Webster. We didn't think there were any more of them.
Yes, there is, said Webster. There's been one here all the time. Jenkins is a Webster.
He never told us that.
He wouldn't.
The fire had died down, and the room had darkened. The sputtering flames chased feeble flickers across the walls and floor. And something else. Faint rustling, faint whisperings, as if the very walls were talking. An old house with long memories and a lot of living tucked within its structure. 2,000 years of living. Built to last, and it had lasted. Built to be a home, and it still was a home. A solid place that put its arms around one and held one close and warm. Claimed one for its own. Footsteps walked across the brain. Footsteps from the long ago. Footsteps that had been silenced to the final echoes centuries before. The walking of the Websters. Of the ones that went before me, the ones that Jenkins waited on from their day of birth to the hour of death. History. Here is history. History stirring in the drapes and creeping on the floor, sitting in the corners, watching from the wall. Living history that a man can feel in the bones of him and against his shoulder blades, the impact of the long dead eyes that come back from the night.
Another Webster, eh?
Doesn't look like much.
Worthless. The breed's played out.
Not like we were in our day. Just about the last of them.
John Webster stirred.
No, not the last of them, he said. I have a son.
Well, it doesn't make much difference. He says he has a son, but he can't amount to much.
Webster started from the chair, Ebenezer slipping from his lap.
That's not true, cried Webster. My son.
And then sat down again. His son, out in the woods with bow and arrows, playing a game, having fun. A hobby, Sarah had said before she climbed the hill to take 100 years of dreams. A hobby. Not a business. Not a way of life. Not necessity. A hobby. An artificial thing. A thing that had no beginning and no end.
a thing a man could drop at any minute and no one would ever notice. Like cooking up recipes for different kinds of drinks. Like painting pictures no one wanted. Like going around with a crew of crazy robots begging people to let you redecorate their homes. Like writing history no one cares about. Like playing Indian or caveman or pioneer with bow and arrows. Like thinking up centuries-long dreams for men and women who are tired of life and yearn for fantasy. The man sat in the chair, staring at the nothingness that spread before his eyes, the dread and awful nothingness that became tomorrow and tomorrow. Absent-mindedly, his hands came together, and the right thumb stroked the back of the left hand. Ebenezer crept forward and through the fire-flared darkness, put his front paws on the man's knee, and looked into his face. "Hurt your hand?" he asked.
"Eh?"
"Hurt your hand? You're rubbing it."
Webster laughed shortly. "No, just warts."
He showed them to the dog.
"Gee, warts," said Ebenezer. "You don't want them, do you?"
"No," Webster hesitated. "No, I guess I don't. Never got around to having them taken off."
Ebenezer dropped his nose and nuzzled the back of Webster's hand.
"There you are,"
he announced triumphantly.
"There I'm what?"
"Look at the warts,"
invited Ebenezer. A log fell in the fire, and Webster lifted his hand, looked at it in the flare of light. The warts were gone. The skin was smooth and clean. Jenkins stood in the darkness and listened to the silence, the soft, sleeping silence that left the house to shadows, to the half-forgotten footsteps, the phrase spoken long ago, the tongues that murmured in the walls and rustled in the drapes. By a single thought, the night could have been as day. A simple adjustment in his lenses would have done the trick, but the ancient robot left his sight unchanged, for this was the way he liked it. This was the hour of meditation, the treasured time when the present sloughed away and the past came back and lived. The others slept, but Jenkins did not sleep. For robots never sleep. 2,000 years of consciousness, 20 centuries of full time, unbroken by a single moment of unawareness. A long time, thought Jenkins. A long time even for a robot. For even before man had gone to Jupiter, most of the older robots had been deactivated, had been sent to their death in favor of the newer models that looked more like men, that were smoother and more sightly, with better speech and quicker responses within their metal brains. But Jenkins had stayed on, because he was an old and faithful servant, because Webster House would not have been home without him.
"They loved me,"
said Jenkins to himself. And the three words held deep comfort. Comfort in a world where there was little comfort. A world where a servant had become a leader and longed to be a servant once again. He stood at the window and stared out across the patio to the night-dark clumps of oaks that staggered down the hill. Darkness. No light anywhere. There had been a time when there had been lights, windows that shone like friendly beams in the vast land that lay across the river. But man had gone, and there were no lights. The robots needed no lights, for they could see in darkness, even as Jenkins could have seen, had he but chosen to do so. And the castles of the mutants were as dark by night as they were fearsome by day. Now man had come again. One man. Had come, but he probably wouldn't stay. He'd sleep for a few nights in the great master bedroom on the second floor, then go back to Geneva. He'd walk the old, forgotten acres and stare across the river and rummage through the books that lined the study wall. Then he would up and leave. Jenkins swung around. "Ought to see how he is," he thought. "Ought to find out if he needs anything. Maybe take him up a drink.
although I'm afraid the whiskey is all spoiled. 1,000 years is a long time for a bottle of good whiskey.
He moved across the room, and a warm peace came upon him, the close and intimate peacefulness of the old days, when he had trotted, happy as a terrier, on his many errands. He hummed a snatch of tune in minor key as he headed for the stairway. He'd just look in, and if John Webster were asleep, he'd leave. But if he wasn't, he'd say, "Are you comfortable, sir? Is there anything you wish? A hot toddy, perhaps?" And he took 2 stairs at a time. For he was doing for a Webster once again. John Webster lay propped in bed, with the pillows piled behind him. The bed was hard and uncomfortable, and the room was close and stuffy, not like his own bedroom back in Geneva, where one lay on the grassy bank of a murmuring stream and stared at the artificial stars that glittered in an artificial sky, and smelled the artificial scent of artificial lilacs that would go on blooming longer than a man would live. No murmur of a hidden waterfall, no flickering of captive fireflies, but a bed and room that were functional. Webster spread his hands flat on his blanket-covered thighs and flexed his fingers, thinking. Ebenezer had merely touched the warts, and the warts were gone. And it had been no happenstance. It had been intentional. It had been no miracle, but a conscious power. For miracles sometimes fail to happen, and Ebenezer had been sure. A power, perhaps, that had been gathered from the room beyond, a power that had been stolen from the cobblies Ebenezer listened to. A laying on of hands, a power of healing that involved no drugs, no surgery, but just a certain knowledge, a very special knowledge. In the old Dark Ages, certain men had claimed the power to make warts disappear, had bought them for a penny, or had traded them for something, or had performed other mumbo-jumbo, and in due time, sometimes, the warts would disappear. Had these queer men listened to the cobblies, too? The door creaked just a little, and Webster straightened suddenly. A voice came out of the darkness. "Are you comfortable, sir? Is there anything you wish?"
"Jenkins?" asked Webster.
"Yes, sir," said Jenkins.
The dark form padded softly through the door.
"Yes, there's something I want," said Webster. "I want to talk to you."
He stared at the dark, metallic figure that stood beside the bed.
"About the dogs," said Webster.
"They try so hard," said Jenkins. "And it's hard for them, for they have no one, you see, not a single soul."
"They have you."
Jenkins shook his head. "But I'm not enough, you see. I'm just, well, just a sort of mentor. It is men they want. The need of men is ingrown in them. For thousands of years it has been man and dog hunting together, man and dog watching the herds together, man and dog fighting their enemies together. The dog watching while the man slept, and the man dividing the last bit of food, going hungry himself so that his dog might eat."
Webster nodded. "Yes, I suppose that is the way it is."
"They talk about men every night," said Jenkins. "Before they go to bed, they sit around together, and one of the old ones tells one of the stories that have been handed down, and they sit and wonder, sit and hope."
"But where are they going? What are they trying to do? Have they got a plan?"
"I can detect one," said Jenkins. "Just a faint glimmer of what may happen. They are psychic, you see. Always have been. They have no mechanical sense, which is understandable, for they have no hands. Where man would follow metal, the dogs will follow ghosts."
"Ghosts?"
"The things you men call ghosts. But they aren't ghosts, I'm sure of that. There's something in the next room, some other form of life on another plane."
You mean there may be many planes of life coexisting simultaneously upon Earth?
Jenkins.